great last talk. Well, if that was the graveyard talk, this is the zombie talk. If you need to get up and stretch, that's fine. Crossmark is an elegant solution to a chronic problem in science communication. How to update the original message when it is no longer accurate or valid. It is a solution, nonetheless, that is based upon a poorly understood process, how error gets promulgated through the literature, and why these errors are so persistent. If we can better understand why corrections and retraction messages fail to reach their intended audience, we can be in a better position to predict the success of solutions like Crossmark, and if need be, to extend its implementation. In this talk, I'll be presenting some new research on the persistence of retracted articles on the public internet and in personal libraries, discuss how these findings affect the efficacy of Crossmark, and propose two new related Crossmark implementations, one I've just learned isn't so new. First, what do we know? We know that the number of article retractions is small, but has been increasing substantially in recent years. It is not well understood whether scientists are becoming less trustworthy, or that we are simply getting better at detecting and reporting errors. There is probably some of both going on. We also know that retracted articles continue to be cited as valid studies for years, that retraction notices make some difference in slowing the citation process, but not much. And in spite of definitive guidelines by the Committee on Publication Ethics, or COPE, journal publishers are inconsistent in how they alert readers, if at all. We also know that most academic journal publishers allow self-archiving of some version of a journal article. However, authors often ignore publisher policy and do whatever they wish. And last, that articles are likely to be found on public websites out of the control of the journal publisher. We assume that in spite of the actions of well-intentioned intentioned publishers and indexers, that we are dealing with a chronic problem of reaching readers long after the original paper has been published. That part of the problem is due to the many ways readers get to the scholarly literature. That part of the problem is due to the proliferation of article versions. That part of the problem is that scholars hoard articles in personal libraries, and that we are all taught this behavior very early on in our education. And that if the hoarding goes on early on, before retraction, scholars may be unaware of a change in the status of the article. From a pragmatic standpoint, readers should assume that the article status is static unless told otherwise. Remember that only a tiny fraction of 1% of the literature is corrected or retracted each year. And there is little incentive for the reader to search for updates. Essentially, it is not an effective use of the reader's time. We don't know the extent of retracted papers on the public internet, and whether these non-publisher sources are preventing readers from receiving the current version of a record. You want to take the picture now? Thanks. Sorry, no, it's okay. It's like, it's all of a sudden I can't see the words anymore. It's like, okay. No, that's all right. We don't know what versions of a scholarly article are publicly available, although we suspect many versions. And perhaps most importantly, we don't know the extent of retracted articles that exist in personal libraries. So this is what we did, which leads me to describe our research study, a study with two components. The first component was to search the public internet for copies of retracted papers. This was to understand how many public copies were out there and in what form. The second component of the research was to gain insight in what existed in scholars' personal libraries. For this, I hired a programmer at Cornell University to develop an API that searched Mendeley, a popular bibliographic tool that helps scholars manage references, store papers, and share those papers with other scholars. I understand that there are many other tools for storing and managing papers, and that we shouldn't consider Mendeley users to be representative of all scholars. Mendeley, however, does provide us with a window into the private libraries of authors. Let me now present the results. The most frequent location for public copies to the retracted literature was PubMed Central. Here's an example of a retracted PNAS article that is provided in both page view format below, as well as full article view. Neither of these views includes a retraction notice. This PubMed Central record does include a retraction notice. However, the PDF, full PDF, does not. And the full PDF was located by doing a Google search, title search, which means that a reader may not be able to see the retracted notice. Many retracted articles are found on personal websites. Here is the personal website of Brian Deer, the investigative journalist who uncovered the fraud of Andrew Wakefield and his controversial study of the link between childhood vaccination and autism. And the Lancet paper, with its explicit retraction watermark, more like a stain than a watermark. Can't miss that one. Retracted articles are also found on association websites like the AAAS, which contains an advanced copy of a paper that hasn't been removed. This is the stem cell paper by South Korean researcher Woo Suk-hwang. Indeed, while many publishers have clearly identified a retraction in their final publication, there is still an earlier version of an article on their website, such as this paper in press on the JBC website, again findable doing a simple title search in Google. Not surprisingly, there are author manuscripts of retracted articles found in institutional repositories, although fewer than I initially expected. This is a retracted paper. There is no mechanism that I know of that attempts to update documents in institutional repositories. And in spite of publisher policies, there are versions found in repositories that are not be permitted by the publisher. Not surprising. I also found other public versions of retracted articles in repositories. This is the reviewer manuscript from Scholar One that is available in PEER, the Large European Experiment in Journal Repository Archiving. Strange. Second to PubMed Central, university websites were the second most frequent source of public access to retracted papers. Many authors are very proud of their accomplishments and do much to promote their papers in CV form. In spite of courseware that restricts access to registered users, there are copies of retracted papers such as this Letter to Nature accessible to the public. Laboratories also provide public access to retracted papers, as do journal clubs, medical schools, medical institutes. Outside of universities, copies of articles lacking retraction notices are highlighted on advocacy websites, in this case, a patient group for those suffering from multiple sclerosis. And companies selling dietary supplements often use scientific articles as promotional tools to sell their products. Remember again, these are all retracted papers. Scientific articles are also found on websites offering medical services. In this case, the physician offering breast reconstruction surgery is also the author of this retracted article published in Breast. I also found copies of retracted but unmarked articles on aggregator sites like BioMedSearch, which collects and provides access to material that can be freely redistributed, like this retracted article published by PLOS. Last, I found sources that acted like clearinghouses for scientific articles, such as this FTP site in the Ukraine offering entire issues of Nature, and catalogs of hundreds of leading journals on this Iranian website. Now, I'm told that Marty Frank is assembling a covert Navy SEAL team of publishers to parachute into Iran and take this site out. Is this session recorded? Let me sum up. This actually really scared. If I were a publisher, I'd be very scared of this. Let me sum up the first part of the study. While retractions are increasing in frequency, so is access to public copies of these articles on non-publisher websites. Of the nearly 1,800 retracted articles indexed in PubMed, 308, or 12%, could be found as public copies on non-publisher websites. 29 of them could be found in more than one location. 90% of these copies were publisher version, 9% were final manuscripts, and 1% were other versions. 41% of these public copies were found in PubMed Central, 28% on educational websites, and 7% on commercial sites. Just 24% of these copies came with retraction notices, and if we remove the PMC page view, this number declines to just 5%. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, we wanted to gain a window into what scholars have in their own personal collections and developed an API to search for copies of articles in Mendeley libraries. As one of their users described the program, Mendeley is pretty much the most fun you can have with your pants on, which may tell us more about users of Mendeley and how they need to get out of their office a little more often. Could you imagine Crossref, just about as much fun as you could have with your pants on? You would lose your job tomorrow if you did that. In fact, you may already have. All right. Our API, developed by Rick Salterra at Cornell, searches for title variations, DOIs, and PubMed IDs, and can run in batch search mode. We could find 75% of the retracted articles in someone's personal Mendeley library. On average, a record was held in 3.4 personal libraries, what Mendeley calls readers. Some high-profile articles had many readers, and finding a bibliographic record, however, does not confirm that they also have a copy of the article, although Mendeley does allow sharing of papers. But there is a concentration of readers in top journals, not surprising, and that high readership articles were more than three times as likely to be found on public non-repository websites. I'm going to spend my last few minutes talking about implications of these findings. First, the findings indicate that the problem of persistence of retracted articles cannot be controlled by copyright. In spite of politics, publishers ultimately lack full control of their articles in this networked environment. Second, that increased access comes with a versioning problem, which may prevent status updates from reaching readers. And third, that we are ultimately trying to fix a communication problem and be able to alert readers when a version of record is no longer a version of record. So we return to this solution called Crossmark and try to predict how effective it will be when fully implemented. Given that 90% of public copies are the publisher version, it is likely that the Crossmark symbol would be seen by the future reader. However, viewing the Crossmark symbol does not necessarily mean that the reader has the most current information about a paper. The current implementation of Crossmark makes the reader responsible for initializing the verification check, a comment made this morning. Many authors like me write our articles directly from bibliographic software, which means that authors will continue to reuse and recycle old citations in future papers. Unlike the software programs on my computer, Crossmark cannot update or replace older PDFs published without the symbol. And lastly, institutional self-archiving mandates may increase the frequency of author manuscripts on the public internet. Crossmark is an elegant solution to a communication problem, but I believe that will make a difference in reducing the promulgation of scientific error. But I believe that it could be more effective in its implementation. Reducing the persistence of error in the literature requires a three-part solution. We need to reach readers before reading. something that the National Library of Medicine has been doing since 1984, and which Google Scholar and Microsoft Academic Search will be implementing as well. Before writing, with open metadata available from the Crossmark service, as Jeffrey Bilder mentioned, bibliographic tools like EndNote, RefWorks, Mendeley Papers, and others could implement a service in which a user could click on a button and the software could search the Crossmark database for status updates to the records contained in one's personal libraries. These personal library programs could also be set to search for updates on a weekly basis, for instance, or check for updates whenever the software is launched. And last, before publication, Crossmark could be added as an optional service for publishers. Manuscript bibliographies could be checked against the Crossmark database, and publishers would receive a report with references tagged when corrections and retractions have been issued. Neither one of these steps is enough to prevent the persistence of error in the literature. However, taken together, they may help to greatly minimize its effects. Thank you. Just joking about the Navy SEAL team. Here's my question bomb. Hold on. Wait a second.
So I've got one. I missed the very beginning, but you just talked about retractions in this study, right?
Yes.
But presumably somebody could do a similar research on other types of changes to scholarly.
Absolutely. And initially when I proposed this study, I was going to look for retractions and corrections. And what I learned from the National Library of Medicine is that corrections are not well indexed as either a significant correction or just sort of an ordinary benign correction, like a change in an author name. So it was difficult to look for sort of corrections that really actually made a difference. Hence, we sort of divided the study into two parts, a look at retractions and a search for what's in personal libraries. I really believe that what exists in personal libraries may be a more pernicious problem in the persistence of error. If authors behave like me, they collect articles soon after they're written, and they're stored away, and they're used, and they're annotated, and there's really no incentive to look for updates. So I want to provide something which takes the burden off me and allows me to create sort of automatic updates. The other thing about the studies, there's a relatively small corpus of research that looks at retractions, and most of them have focused on the problem of citing retracted articles and how retracted articles continue to get cited for years. And the question is, why do they get cited for years? And could something be done to prevent people from continuing to cite them for years and give them validity? We can imagine that there would be reasons why you would want to cite a retracted article. But I imagine that in most cases, the author does not know it's retracted. And the studies of looking at the words around a citation to a retracted article seems to support that. They're cited as valid studies. You know, I'm sorry, the Crossref police are going to be after you with a microphone.
The cited by can help tremendously with that, because if you present or propose a paper with a series of reference and one of them does not exist anymore, when it will go through the Crossref system, it will be flagged and can go back to the authors before it's finally published.
So that would be before publication. Absolutely.
During the submission process.
During
yes.
submission, exactly. Now remember, the article still exists. It just isn't a valid study, but it still exists. But I take your point.
Well, great study, Phil. And you might expect this question given some of my early involvement. You based the study on PMC, where mainly biomedical literature, where our
PubMed, not PubMed Central.
Sorry, PubMed.
Right, that's right.
But our understanding is in biomedicine, there is less aversion problem than many disciplines. If you looked, for example, at economics, you'd have far more, much more of this personal library, different versions, and I suspect the problem you've talked about here would be much greater.
Yeah, absolutely. That's we did talk about this. In economics, my neighbor is an economist. I asked him, does he know of a retracted article in economics? And he says, no, it doesn't happen. And I said, well, why not? He said, well, economists get things wrong all the time. And I said, yeah. And he said, it doesn't matter. No one ever died of economics. So, but essentially, what he was saying is in his field, people know that there are certain articles that you just need to stay away from. There's sort of tacit knowledge in the community. Right. Yeah. So there was, I also tried to look for other indexes that indexed retractions. The Web of Science by Thomson Reuters has a correction field, but it doesn't distinguish between retractions and corrections, which is problematic, and other indexes don't do it at all. So if you search, say, Scopus for the word retraction, you get medical articles talking about the retraction of a bullet from a 48-year-old woman's head or something. It became really problematic.
Your comments about retractions versus corrections reminded me of a conversation that Bruce Rosenblum and I had in the hallway earlier at this meeting. Do you think that Crossref and Crossmark should be establishing a vocabulary for us to describe the nature of the changes?
Wow, that's what a great question. I mean, honestly, and the literature, you could see people argue over this. So there are individuals who say, well, a retracted article is a retracted article. It doesn't matter why it's retracted. And forcing authors to sort of fess up that they made up the data may be so difficult to do. Why don't you just say they made an error? It was an error of sort of erasing some data points, but it was an error. On the other hand, there are other editors who say, wait a second, you need to be able to publicly flog and punish those who have committed misconduct and separate those from the ones who just made innocent error, you know, a problem in some way. From my point of view, corrections or retraction, or why in our... So, your sense is the vocabulary of the distinction between a retraction and a correction?
What kind of correction is that useful?
You said you couldn't study corrections because there wasn't a standard way of approaching that. So I'm asking you, do you think we should be agreeing on a vocabulary to describe the nature of corrections? I mean, even in Crossmark as right now, we're not forced to use the word retraction for a retraction. There's no... So the value of the metadata for your future studies is going to be iffy.
Yeah. My personal feeling is that language is something that's discipline-centered, and you let the community decide how they're going to treat the articles and do it. And which is... by the way, I have to say that I'm receiving money from the institution from Crossref to do this study, so I just want to get this. But that doesn't mean that I have to agree with all of their points. But what I really like... Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, hold on, don't talk about this. Okay, all right. But what I really like is that they say significant correction. Do they say what kind of significant correction? No, they just said significant. You decide what is significant. And as fundamentally, if we sort of get down to how I value science, I fundamentally believe that science is this bottom-up process where individuals aggregate together into disciplines and they combine something and create something that they call science and scholarship. And to sort of impose a vocabulary from the top down, I think is just problematic. I think it's a non-starter, and I think if anyone proposes a systematic vocabulary, they need to speak to a researcher to understand what science is all about, because they clearly don't understand what scholarship is and how it's organized. Sorry, that's really strong reading, but I like...
You're using a vocabulary.
That's true.
Correction and retraction. You have those different in your head.
No, actually, you're... Essentially, if we were differentiate them, it's not a matter of status. It's actually you've defined what has been removed from the literature. It's a binary. It's withdrawn. So you like the word withdrawn rather than retracted?
No, we do both, retract and withdraw.
What's the difference in your field?
It's not a field, it's publishing. Withdrawn is we're under orders to take it down legally.
Yeah.
Retracted is the editors have decided that it is not sound science and we have to watermark it as retracted.
Okay.
Phil, very interesting. I was wondering, did you take a look at whether or not journals were leaving studies up on their own sites? Whether, and I know you were only looking at the publicly available, so that's going to limit you.
No, I did include non-final versions on publisher websites. So that JBC example that I showed you, that's still an article in press that's been up there on their site for years. And in fact...
Right.
Yeah, don't laugh. I imagine some of your journals, it's the same thing. Sorry.
So I guess my question is that there are some journals, and in fact, some pretty significant publishers that, and I take your point that journals often basically reject the advice or at least don't heed the advice of their publishers. But is there any consistency or inconsistency as far as leaving studies up with retraction, with watermarks on them, and or simply taking them down? Because the leaving them up without a watermark, I think we can all agree, is just not right. But there are journals who have an intellectually honest rationale for removing it entirely from their site. Did you come across that?
Well, come across. I see evidence, but what it tells to me is that at some point, individual journals said, we're going to have to start changing our practice and start watermarking. And so you see it starting at a particular point and going on. Or that there was some retrospective work that was going on. But mostly what I see is that a policy changed at some point in time, after which you see some consistent work, before which you don't. So there are cases, say, remember the first example that I showed of PNAS? The early PNAS articles that went up there. PNAS was one of the first journals to go up on PubMed Central. And essentially what they did is they just digitized their back files. The idea of retractions or corrections didn't even probably enter the discussion. We want to digitize our back files and put it up in PubMed Central. Great thing. And then at a certain point, they're saying, okay, well, now we need to add them individually, after which you now see these retraction notices. So I think the persistence of, at least from these publisher sites in PubMed, really reflect sort of a non-policy at a particular point that changed into a policy. Whether it's in the interest of publishers to go back and revisit them is something that you need to decide. But they do exist. There was another question on this side just before.
Bruce Rosenblum from Anera. I'm going to tie your exchange with Evan and the conversation he and I had earlier with the slide that you still have up on screen. It is possible to alert editors during the editorial stage that an article has been retracted, but you have to do it as cleanly and with as little noise as possible. And if there's not a standard vocabulary for retractions and withdrawals in contrast to corrections, the editors will never see that an article's been retracted. This can be done today with PubMed. PubMed has a standard ontology for this. And I would submit that if Crossmark doesn't come up with a standard ontology and do it quickly, then the information for the purposes that you're putting up in your last slide will be so diverse in nature that editors will be unable to wade through it and quickly make use of it to determine when a retracted paper has been cited.
So part of the conversation that's gone on around Crossmark is whether or not people should do back files, and if so, how far back they should go.
Right.
Did you get any sense, just looking at what you were looking at, whether there would be, how useful it would be to go into back files, and did you get a sense of, if it is useful, how far they should go?
Yeah, it's a good, that's up, right. I mean, luckily the retractions are, when we think of the history of journal publishing, retractions are relatively new, a relatively new phenomenon. So going back and retrospectively doing work is probably not a big deal. For most journals, they have just very small, actually most journals have no retractions. A handful have dozens of them. It's, I don't know how much work is done into it, but we're really still dealing with hundreds on an entire scale of the entire journal publishing industry, it's not a huge number of articles. It could be done by hand.
Well, yeah, but factoring in the fact what you pointed out, which is that the damage is done.
The PDFs
are on someone's hard drive now.
Right.
So we can't go and reach out into people's hard drives and cross-mark them.
No, but thinking differently, they do that on my computer. They replace my software all the time, and they force me to click through licenses. So we do have this model, but I understand that implementing such is a non-starter. You can't do that.
Right. So I guess the point is that the publisher can actually designate what kind of update is occurring. We generically in the Crossmark system define any of these things as an update, and the publisher can choose whatever vocabulary they want. They could say this is an update, it's a retraction, or it's a correction, errata, corrigenda, whatever they need to do. Protocol updates. I mean, the big thing that I discovered, and you didn't study updates, but if you go out to lots of publishers, they have lots of material updates that they think of as regular things. Protocol updates are a classic example. But I also agree with you that varies from discipline to discipline so much that it would be very hard to categorize updates. There seems to be more consistency in the application of retraction and withdrawal. However, I think that probably is pretty universally understood across publishers. Those two activities, although the way they pursue them are quite different.
Yeah, retraction and recall are pretty delineated in the sense that none of the article is valid, as opposed to something that I'm still trying to wrap my head around, such as a partial retraction. I often find that to be an odd
expression
thing.
Of concern is my favorite.
I actually really like expression of concerns. That's just saying the editors have lost trust in that article. It's the legal team that's working behind the scenes, and you will, stay tuned. TBA. That's what they're really saying. I love that. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, thank you.